The Google Pixel Slate reviewed Jason's gift guide with headphones and gaming accessories and HD retro gaming with Analog Super NT. Live from Twit Studios in Petaluma, California, it's the new Screensavers.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
The new Screensavers is brought to you by LastPass. Secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 43,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. And by Slide Belts by Brig Taylor. High quality, comfortable ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. Get a better belt for yourself and your loved ones this holiday season at slidebelts.com/twit. Use the code TWIT for 20% off. Savers episode 186 for Saturday, December 8th, 2018.
Hi.
I am Leo Laporte.
And I am Megan Maroney.
No, you got the wrong card. He's
Jason
Howell.
No, that's right. It does say Jason Howell here. I just wish I was Megan Maroney.
Star, don't we all? Star of All About Android and Tech News Weekly and a regular contributor to Triangulation.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, the new Screensavers. Hello, Jason.
Hi. Welcome back.
Thank you. I was in New York for like 3 days.
Yeah?
We'll have a slideshow at the end.
Oh, good. I'm going to show you all the pictures from my trip. I know where this goes.
Oh, yeah, believe me. My dad, you know, on the last trip we took, I sent photo cards, Bill Atkinson's photo cards. I sent a lot of them back from
the trip.
Yeah, even you say a lot. My daughter said,
Dad, it's like a whole stack over there.
There's 17 of them, all right? My daughter said, cut them in half. Make people look forward to them. And then my dad just sent me an email. My father, my own father, saying, do you want me to save these or throw them out? I said, you can throw them. He said, do you want them? Because I don't.
You want to frame them or something?
I mean, said, don't worry. Everybody has copies. You can throw them out any time.
It's cool that you can do that, though.
I admit, as an avid amateur photographer, I sometimes subject people to my photos. But these pictures from New York were on the Pixel phone, the Pixel 3. And night sight and I'm just mind blown.
Yeah.
Great phone. I'm sure you talk about this all the time on All That Android.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I feel blessed that my everyday phone is considered to have one of the best cameras on a smartphone. We're actually going to talk a lot about that later in the mailbag. We've got a question specifically about this.
I'll go a step farther. I'll say it's the best because I also carry an iPhone XS Max.
You know what it is for me? It's kind of like I spent so many years wallowing in that world of being an Android fan, but also always hearing that like the iPhone solution is better, and especially with cameras and pictures and everything. For so long, it was iPhone. And so even though now
it's hard
the
to
Pixel
admit,
is considered this,
top,
I still it's like PTSD. It's like I can't let myself go there. It's like I believe it, but does the world believe it?
No. Actually, no. The world still thinks the iPhone's the best, but I'm here to tell you it's not.
I agree.
There's another new Google product that now has Google announced when they announced the Pixel 3 that is now available, and you've got one.
Oh, yes.
This is the Pixel Slate. We're going to get Jason's review.
That's right.
Of Pixel's newest Chrome OS device. It's a tablet. And I think the reviewers have had mixed points of view on this. I'm very interested in what Jason thinks.
I can't wait to tell you. Also, I can't wait to tell you about a bunch of things that you can buy for the holidays.
There's a pile of crap on the table.
I've got a whole pile of crap. It's not bad crap, though. This is a pile of good crap.
This is your picks.
This is crap that makes things sound and play better if you're a video gamer or if you're just a music, an audiophile.
All month, we've been giving our co-hosts a chance to pick their favorite holiday gifts. It's Jason Howell's gift guide. It's about time. Speaking of gamers, for those of you who like old school, old style gaming, Analog has been bringing retro gaming systems into the HD era with the power of FPGAs. Sam Moskovich is going to show us something called a Super NT that upscales your Super Nintendo cartridges.
Yeah, wow. It's pretty cool. It's like a third-party console, Super Nintendo console.
Nice.
Very cool stuff. And then, of course, you know, we have some viewer questions that we'll get to in the mailbag.
Top stories of the week. I was traveling around, so I missed some of the top stories, but I couldn't miss this one. Huawei's basically... the daughter of the founder of Huawei, and she's technically the chief financial officer, arrested in Canada on the behalf of the United States government, who plans to extradite her. And the accusation is that she violated sanctions against Iran, you know, because of Iran, whatever Iran did. You can't sell, you can't deal with Iran. There's worldwide sanctions against Iran. I think it's because of their nuclear program. Mm-hmm. This was the big deal that President Obama brokered, and President Trump has reversed course on. But it was illegal, I may even still be illegal, to deal with Iran. Huawei wanted to sell gear to Iran. They're the number one manufacturer of 5G networking gear, number two cell phone manufacturer in the world. So according to the Justice Department, she created a shell corporation. Mm-hmm. Was it called Skynet?
Skycom. No, close. Skycom.
Skycom. Claiming it was not owned by Huawei, was dealing with Iran. In fact, it absolutely was owned by Huawei. They had Huawei credit cards. They had Huawei business cards. They had Huawei offices. They were not different corporations. So that's what she's been accused of, violating Iranian sanctions. But it's part of the continuing, ongoing saga of the U.S. government versus Huawei.
And so at this point, obviously, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of trade in the news right now between, you know, trade negotiations, trade wars, all this news right now between the kind of tension between China and the U.S. This particular event has been, you know, I guess, as far as this article is concerned, between 2009 and 2014, this has happened. And she has kind of avoided, from what I understand, traveling to the U.S., potentially for suspicion of being, you know,
she went to Canada,
being tackled for this very reason. But it seems very timely that this is happening right now. So coincidence or not? Because it really seems to play into the bigger picture of now.
You know, I want to reserve judgment because it's and I've said this before about the U.S. restrictions against Huawei, and U.S. has been trying to get other governments not to use Huawei gear. In fact, a number of governments are starting to, at great expense, rip their Huawei gear out of their network because of the fear that Huawei is related to the Chinese government. It was founded by a former Chinese military officer, that they might use it for spying or worse, during a cyber warfare, use it to cut off infrastructure, just turn it off remotely. Legitimate fears, but it also feels like there could be a political agenda here.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I mean, at this point, you know, I have a Huawei P20 phone. I liked it a lot. I reviewed the Huawei MateBook Pro 10, which I really, or X or whatever they call it, I really thought it was great. But at this point, I guess the prudent thing to do would be not buy Huawei gear. I don't know what else to do. I mean, we just don't know what the answer is.
And what do we do? Huawei, as a phone company, is basically like the Apple of China. You know what I mean?
They're number two, after Samsung, the number two phone manufacturer in the world.
And so they're going to be releasing hardware. They're going to be releasing phones.
Great phones, too. Did you see that, Mate?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mate,
I played around with it for a good amount of time.
And beautiful.
And great camera. And yeah, I mean, so that's the thing. That's kind of the challenging place to be in if we're reviewing technology. Is like, well, wait a minute. Do we or don't we?
Because I know. I don't know what to say. And I did interview. We were at an event, the holiday event, where Huawei was. I talked briefly to the VP of PR, Huawei US. She was in charge of devices. She's the one who had that beautiful Mate phone. And she said, no, we're secure. We're safe. We go. All the traffic is not routed to China. It's all routed through Germany for privacy reasons. She said, we can't sell the phone in the United States because we couldn't get a carrier because of the U.S. government.
Because of that, yep.
And so it's sold in every country except the U.S. To be fair, the U.S. government has never asserted that the phones are not safe or even the laptops. They're only talking about network gear, 5G network gear. I think at this point it's prudent. When you see other countries ripping Huawei gear out of their 5G infrastructure, it's prudent to say, yeah, I guess not. I guess we won't. Fortunately, well, there are many other good choices. I don't know what I'm going to do with my P20. You want it?
No, I already have one.
You have one too?
Yeah, sure. Let's trade. I don't know. What do you do now? I don't know.
I don't feel like it's spying on me, but who knows?
Hey, who the heck knows?
It's really nice.
That's the problem.
Australia has passed a law, which is not a good thing, that requires device manufacturers to provide backdoors into encryption. Mm-hmm. And even if the government asks to put malware, well, I would call it malware. They would call it spyware, I guess.
Yeah.
On bad guys' phones. This is so the UK has a somewhat similar law. Russia has a law like this. I'm sure China does this. I'm starting to feel like there is, we're going to see this in the US. There's a movement to break encryption on mobile devices. The excuse that these governments give is this is how you catch terrorists and other bad guys. The defense against this that I would invoke is as soon as you weaken that phone, it's not just the good guys at getting to those phones. The bad guys will also be able to get into those phones. We've seen this already. The NSA had hacks that they had developed against devices so they could spy on terrorists. Those hacks leaked out. The Petya ransomware epidemic that cost so much money took advantage of NSA-developed networks attacks.
Right.
We know these governmental agencies are not able to keep these secrets effectively. If these backdoors are put into these phones, I fear for all of us. It means these phones will no longer be secure. It's a bad deal. This is a Proton Mail blog post. Proton Mail makes an encrypted email that's out of Switzerland. They said, because we're in Switzerland, we don't have to worry. The Assistance and Access Act does not impact us. It only impacts companies doing business in Australia. But Google does business
in
Australia.
Well, yeah. How Apple many companies are doing business in Australia? And if they have to follow those laws to do business in Australia, then they're weakening the entire system everywhere else, right? I mean, if you're creating these weaknesses in the encryption for one product or one device in Australia, you have to imagine that that's being created for everywhere, right?
I truly believe that it's just a matter of time before the United States
And that just makes
the same
it
thing.
More discoverable. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It feels like that's the direction that we're on right now.
Don't misinterpret us. We don't want bad guys to get away with it. We think terrorists need to be stopped. That's a real threat. That's a real danger. But the bigger danger is that nobody would have privacy. Phones would be hackable in general. Mm-hmm. And I don't think law enforcement, the most important thing is I don't think law enforcement, despite their claims, needs this. I talked to Phil Zimmerman on Triangulation, the creator of the number one email encryption technology, still for 20 years, PGP. He said, thanks to technology, it's actually Zimmerman's law, as technology increases, government will get more and more surveillance capabilities. Thanks to technology, government, he says, has an HD screen into everything you and I and everybody else are doing. There's just a few dead pixels, and they don't like the dead pixels. They want 100%.
Right.
And they don't need 100%. Let's keep a little bit private.
Sure.
Let's keep a little bit secure. Let's keep encryption alive. This is disheartening, but I think we ought to pass along the news.
Yeah, absolutely.
Google's shutting down Apple.
Now for the big news of the week.
What the hell is Google up to? Can you just explain?
No, you know what? I wish that I could explain, but it's just all over the map, right? So now basically the news is that Allo is going to continue through March 2019, and then I think somewhere around that point, Allo is going to be shuttered. Not too long ago, they moved the entire Allo team over to, I believe it was the Android Messages app, which is where RCS is going to be folded into.
And, what is RCS?
RCS, Rich Communication
Services.
And this is kind of like the carrier-supported opening of SMS to kind of gain some messaging capabilities.
Basically,
that would be something similar to like iMessage.
Yeah, they want to be like iMessage or WhatsApp. They want to have rich communication services.
Yep.
I think Verizon has said now they're going to start supporting it.
I think all the carriers? I think are on board at some point. But
you and I are Google Fi users.
Yep.
I could use Messages, but I would lose the one really great feature of Hangouts, which is there's a desktop version, and I can use Hangouts on my iPhone. I can use it everywhere. So I have a universal messaging service that does do all those things.
Right.
Google's deprecating that. In fact, we heard originally the rumor last week that they were going to kill it. Then they jumped and said, no, no, we're not going to kill it yet.
We're not going to kill it. But we're going to kill it and move them over to, you know, our, I think it's a Hangouts Meet and Hangouts Chat. Or, the problem is there's just so many different directions that Google is thinking about messaging, and it's hard to keep it all straight. As to your question, as far as like this
what
kind of
I
unified
use?
Thing, yeah. I mean, I don't know off the top of my head the perfect solution for you. I do know that Android messages, you can do it on the desktop. It requires the same process as like WhatsApp.
But it's tied to my phone number.
It's tied to your
phone.
So
what I can't
it's actually pulling from your phone.
Is I can't get Android messages on this iPhone.
And that's the sticky point, I think.
Yeah, and I feel like there's got to be a solution. Of course, I can't get Apple's messages on my Pixel phone either, but that's why I've been using Hangouts. It's the one solution for everything.
Well, Hangouts isn't going anywhere yet, so you've still got time. Hopefully, Google, if Google has all of these resources diverted to Android messages and they really think that this is the, air quotes, next wave of its messaging efforts, hopefully this gives them time to take those features and bring them over into Android messages so you'll get the things that you want out of it.
So what do I need? I need cross-platform support. In other words, there needs to be a messages app for the iPhone
that ties to my
Google Fi number. Yeah, see, that's not going to happen.
I don't know. Although, Google Fi did open up for iOS now. So it's not like Fi isn't happening on the iPhone.
I think Apple
They've
would
officially
it.
Supported now.
Apple would approve it if they came out with a Google Android messages for
I mean,
iPhone.
To that extent, maybe they will come out with an Android. It wouldn't be called Android Messages, though.
Yeah, I know.
Who knows what it would be called then?
So WhatsApp works. Facebook Messenger works. The problem is you have to tell your correspondents, please use that. In some cases on an Android device, you can use Facebook Messenger, for instance, as your text messaging app.
Yeah, you can activate
SMS mode on it.
Sure. There are ways. It's just no matter how you slice it, it's broken.
You're going to cover this, I know.
We'll be definitely talking about this on All About Android next week.
It's one of the real areas where Google has just fallen flat on its face.
And even when they come out with a solution, this happens. Like, Allo was the solution. And goodbye.
Tumblr's blocking porn, finally.
You know, Tumblr has decided the internet is not for porn.
It's funny because David Karp, in the early days, the founder of Tumblr, really understood that, you know, a good portion, about 14% of all the Tumblr blogs were adult, and understood that that drove the growth of Tumblr. It was the one place you could go where it wasn't censored. Twitter wasn't censored, but it wasn't as effective. Facebook, you can't do it. So a lot of adult content on Tumblr.
Right.
But now that they're owned by Verizon, I think that they probably think it's a little seedy. Unfortunately, it's easier said than done. You probably saw this, but Tumblr's anti-porn algorithm thinks vomiting unicorns, raw chicken, and for reasons I don't understand, poop cleaners are porn.
Just goes to show these algorithms don't always work the way you think they're
going
to.
I don't understand how this got selected. This is the boot cleaner, boot scrubbing patents.
I don't even know.
The new hashtag, and I'm going to use it, too sexy for Tumblr. I'm using it everywhere. Too sexy for
Is this suicide for Tumblr?
No.
If they have that much.
You can't
much.
Kill yourself if you're already dead.
Okay,
what are you talking about?
But if you're not doing so hot to begin with, and then you take away what, you know, there's probably a large amount of community built around these features.
People are
going to
be upset.
They're going to end up going somewhere else.
Tumblr still is a great platform for an individual, especially an angsty teenager,
sure,
to put up thoughts, quotes, and images.
Yeah.
I think it's a long overdue to get the adult content. It was really out of control on Tumblr. And make it somewhere, it's live journal for the 21st century.
For sure.
So I hope it continues. I hope it succeeds. I bet you Verizon spins it off eventually. I think that's ultimately what's going to happen. Just like they spun off Flickr.
Mm-hmm.
This is another one of those Yahoo properties they don't know what to do with. Finally, Qualcomm's 855 is official. Now, I don't know. I haven't heard anything about this. Tell me. They also have a new 7-nanometer processor for Windows machines, too, right? Qualcomm has a bunch of big announcements.
Yeah, well, they had a whole week. So, you know, all the journalists got flown out to Hawaii, or I don't know if they got flown out there, but they flew out there, and they spent the week in Hawaii.
Well, I'm proud of you for turning them down.
Oh, you know, I don't need Hawaii. I just want this studio.
We don't
this is all I need.
We don't do those kinds of junkets, because I feel like that's going to kind of... It's hard to go on one of those things, enjoy a bunch of Mai Tais, and not kind of fall in love with Qualcomm.
Yeah.
It really does affect
your coverage.
It looked
pretty nice.
Yeah.
Snapdragon 855. So basically, this is the chipset that you're going to hear about for the next year, because always, you know, the Qualcomm Snapdragon top-of-the-line processor is what you're going to find in all the top-of-the-line Android devices.
845, for instance, in the Pixel. Yep. So this is going to be the 10 beta?
Yes, exactly. Ten more better.
Is it better?
And 855. So let's 45% see
45% CPU improvement they're promising.
Yep.
25% GPU.
Supporting multi-gigabit 5G, of course. This was also kind of a big event around 5G. Whether they were successful at proving its amazingness, it remains to be seen. It depends on who you ask. But a multi-core AI engine, 3 times improved AI performance there. AI obviously really big deal, so they're embracing this.
Yeah.
Specialization around enhanced computational photography, another thing you're seeing a lot in phones.
Because Google has a dedicated chip for that.
Yep, and now it's kind of, they're bringing it to the Snapdragon. Optimized for gaming with the Snapdragon Elite Gaming. I don't really know much details around that, but kind of improving gaming performance. They also talked a little bit about 3D sonic sensors for in-display ultrasonic fingerprint sensors. And from what I understand, we can expect to see this likely with this next Samsung device. So Samsung was kind of there in cahoots.
Had that.
They were in cahoots.
Yeah, the Huawei had that. It was a little slower, I noticed.
But but this is so... I don't know if the Huawei was that ultrasonic.
No, I don't know how it did it.
Yeah, I think that... So this might be the differentiator. It's going to work better even with the dirty display. And we'll see...
Tumblr will take care of those dirty displays for you. All right,
Tumblr's
we're going to take
like
a break.
Opportunity.
I really want to know what you think of the Pixel Slate.
Cool.
We actually, everybody who got review units got the i5. We couldn't get the i5 because it had been sold out, or we wouldn't have gotten it in time. So we got the M3 version.
We got the M3, the step down.
I'm kind of glad, because I don't think anybody should pay $1,000 for a Chromebook.
Right.
This one is only $800, but we'll have a review of the M3 version of the Slate
in
just a second. But first, a word from our sponsor, LastPass. In a way, I feel like LastPass has been sponsoring this show for 10 years. We've been using LastPass religiously. I started using it practically when they started. I remember when Steve Gibson interviewed the founder. He got Joe Segrist showed him the source code. Steve gave it his thumbs up. Steve uses it. Everybody uses it. And we use it, and most importantly, here as part of our total security system for Twit. So we use LastPass Enterprise. And I think that's really important. If you've got a business, remember, when you have a business, you're giving your employees the keys to the kingdom, the logins to your bank, your bookkeeping system, your web servers, your databases, everything, right? In order for the employees to work, they've got to log into those. And we know employees do 2 things that are bad. One, they put post-it notes up on the screen with passwords. And two, they share passwords. In fact, it often share passwords with other people who aren't employees. That is a fabulous wide hole in security for any enterprise. I know it was a problem for us. We started using LastPass Enterprise about 3, 4, 5 years ago. We were in the brick house. One of our engineers couldn't remember his password, so he made a public website with all the passwords for all of our stuff. OMG. That's when we said, no, we're going to LastPass Enterprise. Everything's stored in a secure vault. No one has access to that except you, the employee. It's encrypted everywhere except on device. That means even LastPass can't see your password vault. We use it to store everything, not just passwords, but every bit of database logins, SSH keys. I use it to put my passport images, my driver's license. It is absolutely secure and safe. And the beauty of it is it's where you put those passwords that you can't remember. And since LastPass generates long, strong, completely unmemorable passwords and then stores it in the vault, your employees will stop writing the password and putting it on sticky notes. They'll stop even coming up with the passwords. You want them to do that because, frankly, their aunt's maiden name and the dog's birthday is not a good password. Go to lastpass.com/twit. Find out about LastPass Enterprise, the LastPass password generator, the autofill features, by the way, now on iOS 12 and Android Pi. Passwords fill in automatically. It's literally the first thing I install on any computer, any phone, because it makes it easier to set the thing up. All my passwords are in there. automatically. If you use Active Directory, you'll love knowing that employees can log into LastPass with their Microsoft Active Directory credentials. That's fantastic. The LastPass Authenticator makes it very easy to do two-factor. And by the way, you can insist, as we do here, on two-factor. In fact, you have more than 100 policies you can configure with LastPass Enterprise. Set master password requirements, enable password resets. You're able to restrict access, and if an employee leaves, you can get security reports. We use shared folders all the time, so ops has a shared folder, business has a shared folder. That way, they can get the passwords they need, but no one else can. You can even share passwords without sharing the actual password, which is fantastic. I love LastPass. You need LastPass. More than 43,000 businesses use LastPass. 16 million people. That's why it's the number one most preferred password manager. You can have LastPass Premium for personal use. I use LastPass Families at home. That way the entire family gets it. And Lisa is my designated survivor. So should something happen to me, she'll have access, not until then, but then, to my LastPass vault so she can get into my bank accounts and other things so she can handle my estate. I think that's really important. LastPass Teams, if you have a small business, 50 or fewer. And then what we use, of course, LastPass Enterprise. Take control of your business passwords. Reduce the threat of breach. Learn more at LastPass.com/twit. LastPass.com/twit. And we thank them so much for supporting the new screensavers. Now, Jason.
Yes, Leo.
Let us talk about the Pixel Slate. They announced this, I think, when they announced the Pixel 3, and they finally came out with it just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
You had to rush to get this one.
I was a little behind the ball on this. If I remember correctly, I was out of town when the announcement happened. And then when I arrived back and heard that these were actually, you could actually, you know, place these in your cart. When I went there, the i5 version, which is the one that I think we were going to get.
The high-end version.
Yeah, or the lower version of the high-end, the intro of i5 at like $1,000, was already out of stock.
And that's why it's sold out, but it's a lot, $1,000.
$1,000.
So this is a step down. This is the M3. The old Atom processor, rebranded M3.
Yes, so this is the M3. Let's see here. I believe this one has 8 gigs of RAM.
That's good.
64 gigs of storage.
That's plenty.
I feel like that's plenty for me.
Have you felt it slow?
No, I would say the only time that I feel things kind of slow down a little bit is when I have like a decent amount of Chrome tabs open, and then I open an Android app of some sort. If I start jumping into the Android apps on here, that's when things start to kind of fall apart a little bit for me. But I don't really do that in Chrome OS. I appreciate that Chrome OS does that and enables you to run Android apps. I just don't ever feel like it's the perfect experience
even on the Pixelbook, when I have a lot of RAM, more processor power, I only use Android apps to fill gaps, like Snapseed. So a few things that Chrome doesn't do well, I try to stay away from Android apps. They just really don't do well on Chrome OS. They're running an emulation. It's not a real, you know, Android platform.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's nice to know that they do that, like, that you can if you need to.
Yeah.
Like this, for instance, this is the Twitter app running in an Android app on the tablet.
That's the other problem.
And I'm sorry.
Nobody designs their apps for the form factor, right?
Yeah, it's just a little too large. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so, you know, because it's meant to be run like a phone, like that.
Yeah, but at least you can expand it.
Yes,
I've also
exactly.
run into a lot of apps, Android apps, that look just like that on the screen.
Yeah, so you can do a little bit of that with this here, and great, I guess it's nice that you can, but I feel like it's never ideal. But there are ways to fill the gaps. If it's something that you don't have a Chrome app for, great, you can get the Android app and do it. I would just use the Twitter site, of course.
Now, this is a really nice-looking screen.
The display is awesome. I would say it's one of the key features here. It's super sharp display, 12.3 inches, 3,000 by 2,000.
Really high. That's the resolution of my Surface Studio, which is a 30-inch display. I mean, that is almost 300 pixels per inch. That's really good.
And of course, it's touch-enabled.
Okay.
This is running the latest Chrome OS 7.1, so it's got kind of more of a touch interface to it.
Do you ever see any hesitation in the touch? Is it always pretty responsive?
Sometimes navigating through like apps and pulling up the tray, you see a little jitter. You know, things will kind of snap into place a little bit. But overall, I mean, I would say it's perfectly usable, perfectly doable as far as that's concerned. You know, they made these changes with Chrome OS, and I'm happy that they did. It brings it closer to something that can kind of operate on its own. If I pop this out of the keyboard,
I mean, this is a tablet. First and foremost.
There we go. So we're in tablet mode.
In fact, if you want this keyboard, you have to pay extra.
That's right. This is $799 for the tablet itself. The keyboard, which I'll talk about in a second, is an additional $200.
so now we are at $1,000.
Now you are at $1,000. But as you can see here, this is Chrome OS running in tablet mode. And, you know, I think my thinking around this has really shifted a little bit. You should definitely check out this week's Twig, This Week in Google. Kevin Toefel was on, and we talked a little bit about the Pixel Slate, and he helped to kind of change my mind around it. I really wanted to bag on this because multitasking and being productive in tablet mode wasn't ideal for me.
Yeah.
And he just basically had the reminder of, hey, you're using it wrong. Like, this is better for like the lean back experience. This is for when you have a movie and you want to sit down, you want to watch the movie, or you want to play a game or whatever. Being productive in tablet mode, not ideal. And I would say that I would hope that someday it would be okay to do that. But, you know, multi-screen, putting things on both sides and then hopping between them, that's when I would feel things.
You can do that, though.
You can do it, but things would just fall apart. Like, I'd tap into a cell, and it wouldn't register. It would still tap on this side. So then I'd have to tap into the cell again.
Yeah.
And just things would be missed along the way. I would hope that they would fix that over time.
So there's two different directions this competes with. On the high end, with the Surface tablet and the ILK from Microsoft, they're running Windows 10, a real desktop operating system.
Right.
And on the low end, the iPad and the iPad Pro. I'm a real fan of the iPad Pro. I don't even know if you use an iPad.
I haven't used an iPad Pro, but I will say I'm happy you mentioned that because we're nearing the beginning of the year where Megan and I usually do our switch.
Oh, the swap is coming.
And this time we're going to do that. We're going to do the iPad Pro.
She'll have the 12.9-inch.
Yep, she'll have this slate, and so we'll switch and kind of see what we come up with. As far as the hardware, it's got USB-C ports on both sides.
That's
so
nice.
So that's really nice. They can be charging.
Or unlike the iPad, you can use them for storage, right? External storage.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it makes it way more flexible, and I love having the charge on either side depending on what you happen to
be
doing.
I do like that. Yeah.
You've got the dual front-facing stereo speakers.
That's why the bezels are big, because they had to put room for the speakers on the sides.
I mean, the bezels are reasonably big. They're nice and rounded, though. I forgive the bezels. I forgive them on a tablet, because you need a little bit of overlap for holding onto the device, I feel like. But then, of course, you snap it right in. It switches right over to desktop mode.
Special Pogo pin on the bottom, a smart connector.
Yes.
So that powers the keyboard. The keyboard doesn't have to be independently charged or even Bluetooth, right?
Yeah, so yes, exactly. It snaps it right into gear. I didn't really encounter any issues where I snapped it in and didn't get what I wanted out of it. Actually, right before the show today, it happened.
You did?
Yeah, it happened. That was the first time that it's happened.
It's because I touched it.
Yeah, you were close. Your magnetic field. So I'll snap it in, and then this snaps into the $200 keyboard attachment. You can see back here,
there's magnets.
This flap. Magnets all up and down.
Just like the iPad, yeah.
So I can go like that.
Oh.
I can move this any way I want. So if I want it deeper or if I want it steeper.
So you can have any angle at all.
Any angle.
And that's really a nice feature. I wish Apple's keyboard did that. That's nice.
Really nice. It moves pretty smoothly on the back. I would say the one complaint that I have about this, and I think it's just this kind of device or this kind of keyboard in particular, is that it extends so far out that even though this is a laptop, kind of hard to have it on your lap unless you have really long legs. I'm 6'8". It fits on my legs. It won't fit on everybody's legs.
Unlike, it is a folio, so it covers the whole thing. But unlike Apple's, it has a trackpad. Now, some people say, well, great, you need a trackpad. But because the iPad doesn't use a trackpad, that does shorten the length of this keyboard, right?
That makes sense.
To cover it up.
But. Yeah, totally. You still want to be able to cover up. You know, the entirety of the device.
That's a nice looking when it's all put together. It's got a nice soft touch.
It is. I would say the magnet on the bottom isn't very strong.
So if it falls,
it's not really sticking to the bottom. The other magnet's a little bit stronger. But I guess you've got the weight of the keyboard.
How is that keyboard? It's got the round keys. It's a little odd looking.
I actually really like the keyboard a lot. And it's hard to see here, of course, because we've got all the studio lights. They're backlit keys.
Oh, I like that.
So you can work in darkness. And I... You know, honestly, I would say initially I wasn't a huge fan of this, but I've used it now for a week and a half, almost 2 weeks. I've really grown to like it. Like, this is basically what I've been using for the past 2 weeks here at Twit. And
really?
I've gotten really, really comfortable with it.
So the real question, you also have a Pixelbook.
I do have a Pixelbook. Yes.
Google still sells the Pixelbook.
Yeah.
That's a two-in-one. So
I mean, the prices are pretty similar, you know, depending on the...
So that's the question.
That is a big question. I mean, I know for myself, I'm probably going to continue using this.
Really?
Yes, because I want to be at the forefront. I always want to be where Google is, yeah, as far as the direction that they're going. I didn't find myself with this keyboard and the layout of the device itself any less productive here than I was on a Pixelbook. I do, though, have less of a use for a tablet functionality.
Right. Well, that's the main differentiator.
And that is the big differentiator.
Although I like the fingerprint reader. I wish the Pixelbook had a fingerprint reader.
Fingerprint reader is really nice.
That's a real problem with Chrome OS, yeah, is if you don't have an Android device to unlock it, you've got to enter your Google password.
Right.
That's annoying.
I will say about the fingerprint reader, it's really nice because when you walk up to it and you want it on, you just put your finger on there.
It's so much faster.
It gets you in. The downside, though, is, and this is where things kind of fall apart on a software perspective, if you want to use the fingerprint sensor on Android apps, there is no real crosstalk there. So it's really a fingerprint sensor for Chrome OS to get you inside of your device. You want to use it to authenticate for other things, you're going to run into problems.
You'll
I'm not saying that it's completely
there.
Impossible, yeah, but I couldn't get it to work with a few things. Okay. There you go. Ultimately, I'm probably going to stick with this. I think you really have to ask yourself, though, are you a laptop user, or are you going to want to kind of go into that tablet mode? Even with the Pixelbook, as it stands right now, it can fold all the way back so you have a tablet form factor. You just have the keyboard on the underside, and that might be good enough. But there is something to be said for popping this out and just having it and being able to, like, sit on an airplane and watch, yep, watch something in your lap. You know,
I always,
I mean?
You know what? I always leave the keyboard on because it's a stand. And I don't
right.
want to hold the thing
totally.
The whole time. So I don't know if I really see a benefit to that either.
Totally, totally.
Yeah. I think I'm going to keep my Pixelbook. You go ahead and use your Slate.
Okay.
At least it's out there. I have to say, you hit a telling note when you said the fingerprint reader isn't integrated into Android. That's, in a way, the problem with the whole
That's
ecosystem.
Exactly
is Android is a subsystem that is not a full partner. It doesn't work quite as well. It's a little janky. It can crash.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows that lack of integration, I think, shows a lack of effort on Google's part. They need to work harder to make this a unified, seamless experience. It's not there yet.
Yeah, I mean, I tried with a couple of apps with the fingerprint sensor in Android apps. I'm not entirely sure whether
no,
it's like
right.
completely broken or yeah. just in the apps that I used. However, that did prompt me to go, okay, well, what about accessing the camera from Android apps? And I went in and tested
those.
You can
do that.
And you can do that. Yeah. So there are ways. Maybe it's not fully thought out. Maybe this is one of those cases, as Google is wont to do, where 6 months from now, a lot of these kinks are going to be ironed out.
Does this... Chat room's asking, have a fan? No, it's silent.
I haven't heard a fan.
No, I think it's
silent.
No, enough,
I haven't heard a fan yeah. kick in on yeah. this thing.
It shouldn't with that processor, although yeah. maybe with an i5 it might want one. It might get pretty hot.
I should mention, before we move on, I don't have it here with me, but there is another keyboard option that you can get. It's a third-party keyboard called the Bridge
G-Type.
Brydge,
yeah.
and it's $159, so it's less than the $200 keyboard you see here, and it kind of takes it more into like the traditional,
it's like
a laptop yeah. form factor. I have heard though that the keys and the trackpad are not as good as they are here. They feel a little bit squishier, a little bit kind of like a toy.
Yeah, try before you choose.
Absolutely,
you yeah.
but yeah, I'm going to continue using it.
All right, well, you know what we'll do in a few months? Maybe we'll get an update.
Okay.
And, like, are you happy?
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Right.
I'm happy to do that.
And
this is
for
my
Twit
part, machine.
I was really on the fence. I said, man, let Jason buy it. We'll see what he thinks. I think I'm going to stick with my Pixelbook.
All right.
I think that's the way to go.
I don't think you can go wrong doing that because yeah. the Pixelbook is fantastic.
It is
and
last
I love my
year's.
Pixelbook.
It is last year's hardware.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's not as what, but it's the same operating system.
But do you ever run into anything
no.
where you're like, oh, man,
no.
this is so outdated. I wish I had the new one.
It's a Chromebook.
Yeah.
I bought the pen. I noticed you didn't buy the pen.
No.
Does it have a magnetic thing?
It does not.
Okay.
It does not have like a dock for
That's
the pen
another
or
problem.
Any sort of
yeah.
snap for it.
It just kind of sits there.
Yeah. Yeah. Floats in space.
Same pen, though it looks like exactly the same pen as on the Pixelbook. So
yes.
I'll lend you my Pixelbook pen. I never use that either.
I never use
yeah.
it.
We're not artists. Jason has a holiday gift guide next. You know what Jason is? He is an artist. He's a musician. And there is definitely a musical bent to his holiday gift guide.
Sure.
Coming up just a little bit. Yeah. Some certain auditory kind of bias.
If you like using your ears, I'll give you something to put in them.
Something to put in your ear next. But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. You know, right now is the holiday buying season. It's a little slow. People are buying consumer electronics. They're not buying houses. But that's going to pick up as we get closer to the Super Bowl. Right after the Super Bowl, the housing market heats up. I want to give you something to bookmark today so that if you go out house hunting in a couple of weeks, you'll be ready. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. And you can take it from me. This is the site to go to when it's time to get that home loan. It's from Quicken Loans, number one lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction for years and years. I think 8 years in a row now, according to J.D. Power. That's a good sign. Number one in volume, too, as of a year ago. Because that big bank just wasn't thinking about the customers enough. That's what Quicken Loans does so well. Well, the very fact that they created Rocket Mortgage tells you that. Rocket Mortgage is an entirely online mortgage approval process. So the geek in me loves that. I don't want to go to the bank. I don't want to have to put on pants. I want to be able to get a home loan on my computer. I want to be able to go to an open house, pull out my phone, and get a home loan there. And you can do that with Rocket Mortgage. It's a three-step process. They call it the power buying process. Step one, you answer just a few simple questions at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. Within 10 minutes in most cases, you're going to get pre-qualified approval. You choose the rate, the term, the down payment. You got the loan. Nice. Then the next part happens automatically, in most cases without any intervention on your part. Within the next 24 hours, a loan officer is going to verify your income, your assets, and your credit. And they're going to give you then verified approval. Now you got a button you can push. You print out a letter. You give it to your realtor. You give it to the seller. It basically makes you a cash buyer. You go right to the head of the line because you're good for it. You got the loan. And once you get the verified approval, you also qualify for Rate Shield approval. That's step three. They lock your rate up for 90 days while you shop. Up to 90 days. You don't have to worry about rates going up. And by the way, they are going up. Stock market's going down. Rates are going up. It's a little scary going out there in the market. That might be why, even if you're not shopping until next month, you want to go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS now and get qualified. Get that 3 months of Rate Shield approval. If the rates go up, and they probably will, your rate doesn't. It's locked. Now, if rates go down, and they might, your rate goes down. So you can't lose. Either way, you win. That's exactly what you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. I want you to go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS right now. Set it all up. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. And, of course, all this is based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states at MLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. Look, you don't have to remember all that stuff. Just remember this. rocketmortgage.com/NSS. And good luck in that new home. I think you're going to love it. All right.
Welcome home.
Welcome home. It's, you know, buying a house, as you know, you just did that, you know, a few years ago. It's a nerve-wracking experience.
It is.
But at the same time, it's great because that's where your family's going to live. It's where you're going to be all those Christmases and, you know, Thanksgivings. And it's just really kind of an exciting thing.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of exciting things, over the last few weeks, we've been asking our co-hosts to bring us their favorite holiday gifts. And that's time now for Jason's holiday gift guide.
And I mean, you can.
Yes, my friend.
I forgot about the.
We've got
the horns.
A special graphic even for you.
I forgot about the Glockenspiel.
The Glockenspiel is here.
So I thought we could bring some audio because I am a fan of audio, fan of music.
How many headphones are here?
Well, I mean, it looks like there's more headphones than there actually are. There's headphones and then there's headsets for gaming. So it's kind of split between the two. We'll start with the headphones if you like. Have you ever heard of the Monolith brand?
I've never heard that name.
Monolith brand is pretty great. It's
are they new in the business?
Why am I suddenly blanking?
Anthony.
Monolith.
There you go. What? Monoprice. Jeez.
Oh, it's from Monoprice.
Yes, so Monolith is the Monoprice brand of headsets. I completely had a brain fart there.
Oh, well, so, I love Monoprice, okay, but so, I don't think of them as a headphone manufacturer.
Well, you know, they cover so many, like audio and video all across the board, so it kind of makes sense that they'd come out with their own headphones.
Now, here's what
high-def headphones.
I know about Monoprice. They always are the low-price leader.
Yeah.
You get good quality.
Good quality.
You just don't pay that premium that a other brand names add
exactly
for nothing. Now what? Tell me about that.
So
am
you
I wearing
the
M650s?
Yeah, you are. Those are the M650s. Okay. As you can see, they're
nice.
Kind of an open, open design on the side. They're not like they're not like Princess Leia headphones, and guaranteed you're about to see those here in a few. So these are a little bit smaller, believe it or not, but they've got a nice, comfortable feel. I actually use these a lot for doing some recording outside of my home studio, and I really like them. They have a really nice sound to them. 15 hertz to 20 kilohertz response.
And you found it, they sounded good. That's the real
question. I thought they sounded great. Yeah. And I mean, so basically how we're doing this is kind of the lower cost solution.
Well, that's the thing. You could spend hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars on headphones, and I don't know if they sound better or not.
Yeah. Well, the beauty is you trust your ears. If you put them on, you listen to the right material.
Your ears.
I appreciate that. So normally these are $149.
What?
Right now you can get them on sale for $99.
What?
So I think if you've got someone who wants a pair of nice
over-the-ear
headphones. Yeah,
nice.
I know. Like, I got to give it to Monolith. They realize that, you know, you need to have a place to put your headphones when you're done. Like at my house, they're just like sprawled out on the table, and I like this better. It's a tank.
I like it. It's a nice case.
Yeah.
It's got a handle. So, you know, I always said never play pool with a guy who owns his own cue. I don't know what, mix records with a guy who has his own headphone. He's got a headphone case and
with a handle.
He's a pro from Dover.
So that's the M650. The step up would be the $299 Monolith M1060. Now, these are Princess Leia style headphones. You put these on.
Those are big cups.
Yeah. They're pretty
large. Do they mark them with L and R?
So that's one of my weird things. That's one weird thing about Monolith. They put their marks on the cables,
not on the
actual ear cups. So I think you are wearing them right, though. You can see that the pad is a little bit thicker in the back, a little bit narrower in the front.
But you couldn't wear them wrong, because if you plug it in left and right, one cord goes into each ear.
Yes, exactly.
So you could do it either way.
Do it.
On and make them comfortable, then stick the plugs in.
Absolutely. And I will say, like, they're huge. They look ginormous. But I have to say, for the size, they're really comfortable.
They
fit like a cloud almost on your ears. $299 normally. These are on sale right now for $229.
That's a lot of money.
10 hertz to 50 kilohertz response, 50 ohms impedance. Obviously, this has another open back design, has the large ear pads that are really comfortable.
How do they sound?
I think they sound fantastic. I've been using these for a couple of months now, and I'm going to have a hard time sending these back.
Some very fancy headphones. I mean, you've listened to the planar magnetic.
You know what it is for me is, in my own use case, I'm often using these headphones for music that I'm writing and recording.
Yeah, right.
And if I can get lost in the sound, if it doesn't just sound like I'm listening to a recording of myself, and I can actually kind of get engrossed in it and kind of forget about that level of like awareness, then that's great. And I feel like these headphones really did it. These were nice, and nice when I was when I was traveling. These I want in my studio.
These might be good for kids because they're $100. Kids are going to break them pretty quick.
Totally, and they're built pretty well. So you know,
and then if
feels
if,
like
if
good
for
materials,
you, spend a little more, $229, and get the high quality. So the $99 are using Beryllium Dynamic drivers. These are planar.
Those are planar magnetic.
Yes,
so absolutely.
That's the best, right?
Yep. I tend to really like the planar magnetic sound.
I do
some
too.
People say the mid range can be a little muddied at times. It really depends. And there's only a couple of manufacturers that are really making planar magnetic headphones right now. So who knows who Monoprice is working with to get these? They're probably working with some of them in order to make that happen.
Right.
But still.
You can't
bother, you know, the price is really good.
I have a $1,000 pair of headphones from Hi-Fi Man that are planar magnetic. And when I want to just get lost in the music, that's what I do. I put those on. I can turn it up. Nobody can hear it. I'm not bothering anybody. Maybe it doesn't have the spatial feeling of real speakers, but boy, it sounds Great. And I feel like with those, you hear every detail.
You do. And, like, the visual image I get is that of, like, an HD picture where everything just feels crisp and clear. You mentioned Hi-Fi Man, and I'm so happy that we get to talk about this, the Sundara. Now, you may remember a couple of years ago, I reviewed a, I think they were the 400i. Sorry.
Those are comparable to the ones that I have.
Okay.
Well, at home.
Yes,
those
so they were
the
four HE400i's. So a few years ago when I reviewed those were around $400. Those are on sale now for $180.
Wow.
These are kind of the successor to that. So these are $499. So a little pro tip, Hi-Fi Man might drop the price on these in like a year, year and a half when they want to put out the next headphones. But these are really great. 6 hertz to 75 kilohertz response, 37 ohms impedance, and just...
Impedance is something else.
Impedance, thank you.
I have 35 kilohertz impedance. That's a completely different man. So, Hi-Fi Man, are these planar magnetics?
They are indeed. They have a new Neo Super Nano diaphragm, 80% thinner, between 1 to 2 microns. And really, at the end of the day, ultimately, how do they sound? They sound fantastic. Like that clarity that you're talking about. Yeah. I get that out of these,
I like that. There's an airiness or an openness, in the, especially in the high end, that it's hard to duplicate with less expensive. And my God, if you've got a kid who's listening to music on their iPod headphones or their iPhone headphones, please get them some good headphones.
One thing to consider, though, is that you're probably, when you're talking about this level of headphone, you might need some sort of a dedicated headphone
amplifier
to bring it up. Otherwise, you might be raising up some noise or it might not get loud enough for you. I didn't have that issue. Even plugging these in to, like, my phone to listen to music out of my phone, I felt like they got hot enough for me. Yeah. But your mileage may vary.
Yeah, I almost always want to use a high-quality digital-to-analog converter because I listen to digital music, and headphone amplifier. I just find that makes a big difference in the quality of the sound. If you're listening straight off an iPhone, it's not going to sound as good.
Yeah, it's not quite the same. Shifting gears to gaming headsets, and we've got right here the SteelSeries Pro Wireless.
I know the name SteelSeries because I have one of their game controllers for my Android and iPhone device. But they also make, these are headphones for gaming. So what makes these gaming headphones?
Well, so these in particular, so you can see right here, we go ahead and
pop
that
mic
right out.
Oh,
it's
look at
just,
that.
It's just embedded inside.
Is that what the kids want nowadays? They want to be able to rock out and talk out.
Well, I think that's probably a benefit, right? Like, we're so used to gaming headphones seeming just, like, big and clunky and ugly. You know what I mean?
These look nice. So
these can actually kind of, you've got party in the back and business in
front. It's half-hopper up here, and it looks like it's a big traffic jam on 405.
These are $329. And what you get out of this, it is a wireless system, so 2.4 gigahertz lossless and Bluetooth.
Plugs into the gaming console.
Right.
And then you don't have to have any wires.
Right. And you can adjust the mix on the front. It's got an adjustable mix, chat mix, EQ volume, Bluetooth, of course, optical, 3.5 millimeter Bluetooth. It works best with PC, with the Mac, and with the PlayStation 4. So you might have to, you know, pick and choose as far as the
console. Does not work with an Xbox without special adapters.
But sounds pretty nice.
Arctis.
And it has a swappable battery system. So you have a battery in here that lasts about 10 hours, and then you've also got another battery charging in the base.
Oh, so that's a good idea.
And it comes with two batteries. So
you never run out. Nice.
Yeah.
But that's at a price. That's a very expensive.
$329.
That's a lot, especially if you're giving this to a teenager. I'm not sure.
This might be a main event gift for Christmas.
Does it have something a little less expensive?
Absolutely. We've got the HyperX Cloud 2 gaming headset. This is only $99
bad.
And has the distinction of being our producer Anthony's favorite headset.
You know what I like? Look at the this is aluminum cast.
It's got
aluminum.
A nice...
For the so it feels like quality, but where's the microphone?
Nice build quality on
there
that. There is a microphone included right there.
Oh, this is
actually
a good one.
Got a kit bag here, so you can swap out the earphone or the ear pad to be a more of a fabric as well.
This is going
to
be wired.
Faux leather.
This is going to be wired.
So this one's going to be wired for
you.
So that is a big difference.
Everything, right?
Yes,
including the Nintendo Switch, the Xbox, the PlayStation 4.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is a HyperX is a well known name for this. This is fine for a teenager.
Absolutely,
they're playing
$100.
They're playing Fortnite and they want to talk to their
Yeah, and brief, they, you know, and they don't look too bad either. You know what
I
mean?
I think they look
they've
great.
Got a good, they've got
the
good
logo
styling
on the side. Yeah,
yeah.
I love the aluminum.
It's HyperX Cloud 2 gaming headset, $99 on those.
Dell, just tell them you paid more.
Right. The thing is, they're going to know.
No,
like,
will they?
They have access to the internet.
They're not ignorant,
figure this
are
stuff
they?
Out. They figure this stuff out.
Yeah. So I like it that the mic can be detached, so you don't have to have a mic.
Right.
If you're not doing that stuff, but if you want to, that's pretty good.
Yeah. It looks good on you.
I think I have a second career as a Time Life operator.
Let's see here. So shifting away from things you put on your head to things you put in your hand, we've got the Scuf Vantage controller.
I'm getting this. I need a good controller. This is Android and iOS, right? Or
no, so this is this is more for the gaming consoles. This you aren't.
Oh, this replaces my Xbox.
Yeah, this
Elite.
Is for the this one specifically is for the PS4.
Okay. Yeah, it looks it's got the PS4.
And this is like super programmable. And that's kind of the beauty of the Vantage of Scuf is that you've got these what they call sax buttons on the side, so you can program those. The paddles underneath, all of these you can almost like program sequences or whatever you want to add kind of modularity to the functions within a game. But then Scuf is also known for modularity with the controls themselves. You can pop certain things off.
Yeah, this is like the Xbox Elite controller.
Swap it out.
Same, roughly the same price, $169.
Absolutely, $169. Yeah. There is a wireless option for this, which is an additional $30. But you know, you've got your touchpad, your audio touch bar down below. And it's got a nice feel to it.
Yeah, I'm an nice, Xbox gamer, not controller. A PlayStation gamer, so I don't know what this triangle square thing is, but I presume they make them for the Xbox as well. This is pretty nice. SCUF.
Yes.
Scuf. Vantage, $169.
Vantage,
and then an additional $30 for the wireless. That's nice.
Now, if you want to kind of take a trip back in time, and then you can take a look at the new PowerA GameCube style wireless controller.
Oh, look at that. That's just like a Nintendo controller. Look at that.
So this is fashioned after the old GameCube. And what's interesting about this is that, so we've got the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate that came out yesterday, right?
Yep.
Everybody's a buzz about Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Well, you can get this, and a lot of people say this is the controller to use to play that. And basically, that goes back to 2001, if I remember correctly, the Super Smash Bros., what was the game? Melee, back in 2001. On GameCube, it's a tournament favorite.
I wasn't born back then. I don't know.
pro players want to use a GameCube controller to play that series
just like
of games.
It, yeah.
Here you go. You've
nice.
Got the PowerA version of that controller.
And this
$49.
This works with the Switch, but it also apparently will work with other devices like Windows.
Yep.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's
good compatibility.
Android, Mac OS, nice.
It does have the added buttons, the features that are going to work with all the Switch games except for NFC. There is a wired option for $24, so if you want to save some cost and not pay the $49 for the wireless, you can pay $24.
You know what Michael
wired.
Does? He has his Switch in the dock, and he's got it hooked up to the big screen TV, so they like the lean-back experience.
Mm-hmm.
So wireless is actually a good choice for them. This would be a hit, I think. That's very nice.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's got a nice feel to it. Sometimes these third-party controllers that emulate older classic controllers just don't quite feel right.
Yeah, this has a
And this one
has
a really nice feel to it. Another one that falls into that category would be this, the 8-bit Doe.
He's definitely getting this cuz he has complained. Oh no, this is
this is
SNES. So he bought an actual SNES. There's a store down in town that sells vintage gaming, and he's playing Mario on it, but he's playing it with the original controller. This is much nicer. Look at
that. You can actually get these controllers with something that plugs into an original SNES to make it
so
wireless.
So you can use it.
This actually works with Windows, Mac OS, Android, the Nintendo Switch, the Raspberry Pi.
I've
used this controller on my Raspberry Pi kind of emulation system, and it works beautifully. This is only $49 normally. It's on sale for $44, and you get that extra kind of the analog controllers down at the bottom. It's a familiar design, obviously, the Super Nintendo kind of layout. Really great controller. I love the 8-bit Doe controllers. I got their Nintendo 64 controller. I would not recommend that one. That's probably the only controller by them that I've used that I don't recommend. It's just they missed the boat on
and
that
I
one.
Saw they
this
have
one's great.
An adapter that'll hold a smartphone. And you can use as your Android. That's pretty
cool,
too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look at that.
Wireless Bluetooth and direct USB-C connectable. So.
Wow. Now, he has a Switch, and he's been complaining. We actually went out and get him a controller because he says that the built-in controllers that are slid onto the side of the Switch are too uncomfortable. But this,
look at
this
that.
Looks good. I bet he'd love this. What is this?
Satisfy. Satisfy grip. So it's the Satisfy Pro gaming grip. $29 normally. It's on sale right now for $22.
So this uses the existing controllers that came with your Switch, but then just puts a hand grip around it also, by the way.
Yeah.
Holds everything in nice and stable.
Love it. So it really gives it more of kind of like a pro grip on the side.
That's the problem with the little ones. If you have little hands, I guess. Mm-hmm. But this way you get to use the actual controllers, but it's a little bit better way to hold it.
Feels a little bit more natural, I think, than what you get if you don't have it and you're trying to play on those. I love the Nintendo Switch, and I love the kind of the flexibility of these controllers. But having something like that on hand gives you just a little bit more control, a little bit more comfort, I guess.
I think he already has a game controller, but what he doesn't have is something that he can take with him when he has the Switch in kind of portable mode. And I think this would be a really good choice. And it's affordable.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, $22 right now, you could easily throw that into a stocking. And then finally, we have this, the PDP. This is the Xbox One Charge, the Energizer Xbox One Charge system. $29 on this. It's basically a system. I feel like if you have a console and you have wireless controllers, you need something like this. It's going to allow you to charge two controllers with a rechargeable battery pack.
Oh, I need this.
At the same time, just kind of dock them in there when you're not using them. Keeps
them totally
charged up, just drop it in, and then they're both charged up and ready to go the next time you want to play.
This uses the existing Xbox rechargeable unit. It's just a dock so that you can hold them and charge them at the same time.
Yeah, it's a nice place really to put them instead of them just being sprawled behind the TV or whatever.
I can never find my second controller.
Yeah. So they're charged whenever you need them.
It's going to be a game in Christmas, I can tell.
Heck yeah, you're getting every single one of these, aren't you?
I am. Thank you, Jason Howell. For all of your gaming tips, we really appreciate it. That's Jason's gift guide.
That's right.
For 2018.
Ho, ho, ho.
Now, in just a bit, Sam Moskovich is going to show you how to upgrade the video on your Super Nintendo game system. But first, I want to show you something.
Uh-oh. What are you doing, Leo?
Belt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Scared you, didn't I?
Continue.
I'm showing you my Twit slide belt. Slide belts by Brig Taylor are awesome belts. This is a gift for anybody who wears a belt, man or woman or even child. They have sizes for all. It's great because, well, let me show you how this works. The belt has a patented ratchet system. I'm going to just take the belt off. Don't worry, my pants won't fall down. I've stapled them to my hips. This is the patented ratchet system. So the problem with regular belts is they have, what, 3, 4, 5 holes.
Yeah.
It better fit. If it doesn't, you're either too tight and you can't breathe, or your pants fall down. This has 32 adjustments, so you get the perfect adjustment every time. And the ratchets actually are very satisfying when you put the belt on. That feeling.
Yeah.
And it's a solid feeling. They're really not going anywhere. I should mention, though, should it be time to loosen your belt? Perhaps you had a little too much Christmas pudding. You just silently expand it, and no one will know you're giving yourself some more. What's great is the buckles are separate. They're interchangeable. The straps come in a variety of vegan leathers, really nice top grain leather, canvas, and you can swap them. So you get a great buckle like this. This is a monogram Twit buckle. You can get yours monogrammed with whatever you like. And then you can swap the belt straps. So it gives you a lot of different looks and feels. It's really nice. Everything ranging from unisex survival belts. I got to show you that. That's an awesome belt. That has a knife, fire starter, and an LED flashlight in the belt buckle.
This belt might save your life.
It was such a great gift for the survivalist in your family. Or I always think it'd be great for groomsmen, you know, when you have a wedding and you've got to get something manly to the groom's supporters. This is manly and womanly if you have a woman who wants a knife in her belt. This is slide belts, everything you could want. You can wear them casually around the house, at the office, for any dress-up occasion. They're so easy to remove, so that makes them easy for traveling, especially while you're going through security. I always wear my slide belts through security. They also offer watches with swappable watch bands. That's a nice way to customize. Skip the long shopping lines. Give the gift that always fits. Go to slidebelts.com/twit. Use the code TWIT at checkout. You'll get 20% off your order. 20%? And you can order a lot of stuff. Get all your gifts now. Slide Belts by Brig Taylor. Go to slidebelts.com/twit. The holiday season's here. If you're stressed out trying to find a gift for your loved ones, something they'll love and is guaranteed to fit, look no farther than Slide Belts by Brig Taylor. Slidebelts.com/twit. And do use that offer code TWIT. Please get yourself 20% off. Sam Moskovich and this cat here, Jason Howell, have been doing a really great scatting version of Know How, the gaming version of Know How.
The episode this week, by the way, fantastic.
What's it about?
There's some really great stuff. We talk about classic gaming, which I absolutely love, but we do a really great side-by-side comparison between kind of a standard like Geffen HDMI scaler for taking your classic console and putting it to your HDTV compared to the open source scan converter.
Oh, interesting.
And I mean, they're basically the same cost. And it's night and day, the quality difference. So it's just a really cool comparison.
I feel bad because Michael got this Super Nintendo. He got some sort of adapter that hooks it up to the big screen TV. It's an HDTV. It looks terrible. I said, Michael, it's all 8-bit smeary. He says, no, I love it that way. The kids, I don't know what it is. But Sam has a very cool upscaler. This is the Analog Super NT 1080p goodness.
Yes, the console. It's
cool console games. Watch.
So I'm not entirely sure if this how different this is from some of the stuff that we were talking about, because I feel like in the last segment we had the mini consoles that had the games kind of baked in, and then we had some of these third parties that are making some of those their own versions of consoles that have the games baked in, and then some of them that require the cartridge that does the conversion, and even then not very well. Where does the Analog Super NT fit into the mix?
Quite comfortably. The Analog Super NT is a third-party created box that's got some heft to it.
Yeah.
That has what's known as an FPGA board built in, meaning that it is not a software emulator, but it's kind of a hardware emulator. It's using its own circuit board to essentially take the data from your average video game cartridge and read it just the way a Super Nintendo would, so that it's just like a hardware Super Nintendo that has, hey, look, HDMI out. That's a really nice thing to have.
And it's 1080p out, right?
Yeah. So you can get up to 1080p resolution on this, and it'll just take your old cartridges. So we're just going to go ahead, plug this guy in. But now I've powered it on.
Those are fancy.
And that'll take us into a landing menu that you might not expect. So in addition to the flashy intro, which actually plays randomly every single time, little trivia, that was made by a guy named Phil Fish, who's known for an indie game called Fez. He just went in and like made that crazy set of weird shapes that pop up. But once you're actually in, you have some options. Run cartridge, well, that's kind of what you'd expect. But you also have some preloaded games that never saw official launch.
Oh.
These are Super Nintendo-y side-scrollers. One of them is just a tweak on an original game that came out, and one never came out. Before that, we'll get into settings, and we're not going to change any of these. But you can change the resolution. You could go all the way from 480p to 1080p. You even have some 50 hertz monitors. Okay. So if you want to play some European games, you're going to be in decent shape. You can change the ratio of the screen for how the pixels represent. You can add some scalers in terms of using the FPGA board, adding some additional processing for the image. We're not going to play with those today. Scan lines, which people love. You have a whole lot of options for how the scan lines appear. We're going to pick no scan lines for now to keep it simple. I'm not going to mess with advanced mode just yet, but I promise you there's a lot there. Audio out has its own kind of things where you can swap channels, change some of the audio volume stuff. Let's go back just to run the cartridge, just to show you what happens with this copy of Star Fox that we've got.
Oh, Star Fox.
And you can go into the settings and skip that menu unless you hold down a button in order to just go straight in.
Mm-hmm.
But here we go. I'm going to hit the start button. And now here's what's interesting. Star Fox is a peculiar game because it has an extra chip inside of it.
Yes, it does. Right, the Super FX chip.
Correct. And that means it has to interface with the Super Nintendo in order to work. Like it's essentially an addition to the system. But here we go.
Did that require something special to be installed into the Super NT?
Nope.
That's embedded in the cartridge.
That part's embedded in the cartridge. The Super NT simply has support baked in as if it is just like a real Super Nintendo. Yep. But it just works. So what we end up with for $190 is that support for Super Nintendo cartridges that you already love and may already have, plus that easy, clean HDMI out that we wanted from that converter kit that we saw earlier, plus some of those extra scan line and filter options that you might want to apply to get a fake CRT effect if you don't have that old giant tube TV but want to replicate that sort of style. And what's interesting when we're talking about something like the Analog NT, kind of like with an actual Super Nintendo where you're dealing with cartridges, it can be nice to consolidate, and you can use something like an EverDrive or, as we have here, an SD2 SNES, which gives you the option of putting in an SD card that is full of ROMs. Also, this guy has one of these older USB ports. I always forget the name of that
kind. I always forget that one, too.
But the point being
USB Micro
you can,
or something.
If you have, as we've talked about, acquired files for your games legitimate ways, whether you've bought them from other Nintendo marketplaces or what have you, these give you a way for... The price can range from $50 to $200 for these cartridges, depending on the console that you are playing with. But they work. They just tell the Super Nintendo, the N64, whatever cartridge system you're talking about, what the game data is. The big catch is that some of them don't necessarily do like Star Fox does. They don't include like a Super FX chip. Some of the newer ones include some little patches and add-ons that feed the right information and processing to a Super Nintendo, but you may lose 100% game compatibility if you aren't just working with the cartridge. But that's a thing to keep in mind if you're trying to find another way to kind of shrink down all of the junk that you have with your retro setup. So this is honestly a really interesting object to go for that price point. If you're at right around $200, instead of getting a converter cable and using your old gear, you just get this guy.
That is really cool. I might have to get that for Michael.
You're going to get that guy.
He won't notice the difference, though. It was the Star Fox that we saw that was improved.
What do you mean?
On the screen. Was that the 1080p improved version?
Well, so that console is just capable of HDMI right out of the bat. So you end up getting top quality kind of conversion.
That's it.
And, yeah.
It still looks solid, right? I'm just saying. It still looks
Well, you know, it's not going to upgrade, like,
I get it.
The pixels
that's important to understand.
But it's going to make the pixels that are there
look better.
Pristine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the key.
True to form.
That's the key. Thank you, Sam. Always a pleasure. And don't forget KnowHow, twit.tv/KH to catch that entire series on gaming. You'll be wrapping that up in a few weeks. How long? How much longer?
Let's see here. 2 weeks. Next week's
Holy
episode
cow.
Is really great. The creator of TazBot comes in
Fun. And
shows us kind of console hacking and nice. Some really cool things. Nice. And then we've got one more week after that to close
awesome.
Out the gaming series.
Awesome. Now, let me show you something. This we were talking about gift guides. My friend Rich Siegel, who creates Bare Bones, which is the best editor, BB Edit is the best editor for the Macintosh. Everybody should have it. Its slogan was, it sucks less, or it doesn't suck, something like that. And he sent me this lovely T-shirt. They now have a store where they sell BB Edit merch. And I said, well, wait a minute. That's just a black T-shirt. He said, turn it around. On the other side is a mystery Rebus. They also have it doesn't suck shirt. But this is to celebrate their 25th anniversary of BB Edit, the best Macintosh editor. Can you solve this Rebus?
Money your...
it took me a while.
Pay your...
took me a while.
A double dollar sign.
The first thing is a still...
Still...
Saving.
Saving. Okay, I was like paying. Still saving your a double dollar sign.
That's it.
Yeah.
Still saving your donkey. Your donkey. Still
your
saving
donkey.
Your donkey.
Of course.
Since 1993. Thank you, Rich Siegel and Naomi Pierce, who sent this along.
That's great.
To celebrate. And now you can buy this shirt and others at the BB Edit store. I wanted to give them a plug.
BB Edit.
Because I've been a fan. Rich has been great. I think it would be a good time to do the mailbag.
Let's do it.
Do you think it'd be a good time? For the mailbag. And we have a viewer. Where are you from, sir?
Minnesota.
He brought Rufus Zorba, his beautiful yellow lab.
Oh, such a...
And a little later on, we're going to show Rufus.
Dog.
He sings along to the new screensavers.
Oh, I know. We're talking about you. It's okay,
Yeah,
buddy.
He's very aware. He's very alert.
Oh, my God. What an adorable dog.
Yeah, isn't he sweet?
I love your dog.
Isn't he sweet? Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He knows. He knows. He will be singing along. You got to find Alex.
Dogs know when you're talking about them.
Remember we did the new screensavers with live music? We had a string quartet in there. What episode was that?
90.
Group Muse. See if you can find Group Muse, because apparently Zorba loves...
Oh, really?
Yes.
Nice.
And here, by the way, all 17 of my postcards, I'd like to give them to you as a, you know, we're going to, this is Bill Atkinson's amazing photo card app where you actually mail postcards with you know, pictures on them of your own and stuff like that. And we're going to, this is our holiday card, we'll be doing this. And you'll be featured on it along with all of the staff members.
Yep.
And if you're on our list, you'll be getting our holiday card. And as an extra added bonus, 17. No, I wouldn't do that to you. Dad, you can throw them out. It's okay. Pick an email, any email.
I'll take that one.
I have many more copies. This is email number one from Scott. Scott writes, hi, Jason and Leo, I have had my current Google account since Gmail was in beta. That's almost 12 years now, I think, something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Remember when Gmail was in beta and everybody wanted an invite?
Yeah.
And they were selling invites on eBay to get a Gmail account?
That's kind of a big deal.
It was kind of a big deal. I want to get a new account that has a more, for lack of a better word, adult name. Oh, he probably has his, like...
Oh, no.
Scott likes comics at gmail.com. Problem is, I have my whole life in it. My documents, music, and of course, all my mail. I even have Google Fi attached to it. Question is, how do I get a new account, switch my account to the new one without having to repurchase all my apps, keeping my phone connected, and transfer my Play Music data and discount? Thanks, Scott. Oh, he probably bought Play Music when it first came out.
Yeah, he probably has.
So he's getting it for that deal.
$7.99.
Yeah, I am too.
No, we ended up going for the family plan about a year and a half ago, so we got rid of the.
$15.
Yeah, I mean, so I did some searching on this. This is a question that I've seen come up from time to time. Everybody wants to move their Google account from one to the other.
Lisa wanted to do this. She got married, right? Her old account was in her name, previous name. She wanted it. She created a new account with my name, and she couldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, the challenge is. Yes, it's possible to take
your mail,
contacts.
Yeah.
You mentioned Google Takeout as a way to kind of export your data from Google. So there's a way to extract your data. The problem is there's no real way to say, I want to take this full account, and by full account I mean
all
of that information, plus your subscriptions, plus all the apps that you've purchased, and take all of that authenticated stuff that's tied to your account and transfer it to something else. As far as I could tell, and I've searched a lot on this, there's no real way to do this. Barring like some sort of agreement that you can come to by speaking to Google themselves and saying,
speaking
please,
to Google,
but they're not going
to
do that.
There's no one home.
And besides, you're not going to speak to anyone at Google. Like, it's just not going to happen. But that would probably be the only way that you could possibly do this that I know of.
I had a call from a woman on the radio show whose Google account had been locked for some reason. I think she tried to log in too many times with the wrong password. So she lived in Irvine. She went to Google in Irvine, their offices, and banged on the door to get help. Somebody eventually answered, but they couldn't help her.
You did the right thing. We will grant you this wish.
Of course. It's like going to see the Wizard of Oz. Yes. No one sees a wizard. No how. No way.
No how.
So, you're kind of stuck with it. You're going to keep the old account. And that's what Lisa did.
Well, and this is also an issue with Google Apps accounts, right? Like, there are so many people that the Apps account is their main account, and that, you know, Jeff Jarvis would be the first to tell you. Like, that keeps him from accessing some of these new features that get rolled out from time to time. And some people would like to just transition away from Apps account into a normal account, and those things just are not easy, if at all impossible. Or
Google has
if at all possible.
Never solved this one. If you have a G Suite account, and that's your email, like leo@twit.tv, that's what we've got. It's not a consumer account. You can't do a lot of the things you can do with leo@gmail.com. And there's no way to bridge that. It's just you're stuck. And it's baffling to me. This
is
another example of Google feels like 20 different companies under one roof, none of which talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no integration at all.
Yeah.
So that's life.
Sorry.
That's live in la vida
Time to
Google.
Start over or just deal with the fact that your email address says something about your teenage you and not your current you.
I mean, at least with email, you can create a new account, have email forwarded from the old account.
That's
You'll continue
true.
To use the childish name
that's not a bad
for everything
option,
else.
Actually.
And if you give out an email, I think the best thing to do is go to Hover, our sponsor, one of the other domain name registrars, and get a nice adult name, you know, like the Laportes.com.
Right.
And then you can have mail forwarded from LittleLaPorte.com to your Gmail account. Nobody needs to see the Gmail account. Don't use the LittleLaPorte.com, please. Use your own name.
yeah, that would be kind of weird for you to choose that one. But hey, it's a free country.
But that's the beauty of it. Then if you change providers again, you can go. It's easy to do. You
just, it's that's forwarded. Really great. That's a really great
get your own domain name.
If it's truly just about the email address, then that solves the problem.
Right.
Yeah, it's maybe not the most ideal, but there you go. Yeah. We also got an email from Ed who says, "Hi, Leo and Jason. I'm traveling to Europe next summer. Am I better to get a camera for around $1,000 or buy the Google Pixel 3?
What a question.
I'm still using the LG G5, but would like to upgrade. I could make the Pixel 3 my camera for the trip. What would you both recommend?" I think you just answered your question as far as I'm concerned. I personally, more and more, like, you know, I've tried to live this world where I have the phone in my pocket and then I go on a trip and I also take a really nice camera. And I just don't see that the benefits of bringing that extra camera and having to remember it, log it around and all that kind of stuff really match the beauty of having just a really great camera phone in my pocket. And the Pixel 3 is about as good as it gets. Plus, the Pixel 3 has this kind of new enhanced zoom mode. Yes, it's digital zoom, but they're using a lot of AI stuff along with it to make, you know, so if what you want is a nice camera that can give you a little bit of extension, this is a great kind of way to do that without going for like a full-size DSLR or, you know, ponying up for a larger camera. I just think the Pixel 3 is great as a phone and then also as a camera. So why not?
I agree with you 100%. Certainly, if the choice is between a point-and-shoot and a Pixel, get the Pixel.
Yeah.
No, they can do almost anything a point-and-shoot can do. Mm-hmm. Even the Zoom now, they do better low-light photography because it's computational photography.
Yep.
If you're talking a fancier interchangeable lens camera, yeah, there's stuff that can do. The resolution will be higher. You could put a longer telephoto lens on it and get really good optical zoom. You could put a wide-angle lens on it. You could put a macro lens on it. But for 90% of the photography most people do, for the point-and-shoot stuff, do you have the album I shared with you? I took a $5,000 camera with me to New York City when we went to New York City with a $2,000 lens. So I had a very expensive kit, and I ended up almost entirely shooting pictures from the Pixel 3.
Yeah.
And frankly, they're great. Start with the first one. Just click it, and we can go one by one through it. This is just a street shot with the Pixel 3. One of the things camera phones never did well was zoom. They always did digital zoom. Go to the next shot. This is zoomed in using the Pixel 3's capability of zooming. That detail is great.
Yeah,
and they're doing a lot of sophisticated computational photography. That is about as close to optical zoom as you can get on a camera phone. I think more than adequate. The rest of these are done with night sight. This is something you can't do, I think, unless you get a very expensive camera with a very expensive lens, and they're not going to let you bring that in to the Harry Potter show and take pictures of the sets.
Right.
This is night sight at its best. Really remarkable images. Here's Times Square, and you see what night sight did. I mean, it brought up the backs of the people that were dark. It dimmed down the light in front. It preserved the feeling of the scene, and that's what I really think night sight does very well.
Night sight is amazing.
This is the Bruce Springsteen show, and this is, again, the scene from my seat in the theater. And this is a dark theater. This is not a bright theater, but night sight makes everything look like it's broad daylight. Same thing here with the Empire State Building. And if you zoom on in these pictures, yeah, there's not quite as much detail as there'd be an optical zoom and a very high-quality full-frame sensor camera for thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
this is Night Sight Selfie. The front-facing camera does it as well. That's Lisa and me on our way to New York, New York. One more. There is a picture of New York City from the sky. Again, this is Night Sight. Hard to do because everything's moving.
Yeah.
Night Sight works best on stuff that's not moving.
That's nice. But you get a lot of clarity there.
You get amazing shots.
Yeah.
So I have to say, in almost every respect, certainly if you're looking at he said $1,000. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at a Sony RX, RX 100 Mark III or IV, which is about $1,000, those are very good cameras. Marginally better, maybe, but that computational photography, nobody can do that. That is really good. You'd have to use a very fast lens on a very high-end camera with a full-frame sensor. You'd have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to get a better image than that. I'm blown away.
And if you got one of those standalone cameras, you still have to upgrade your phone. So
right
now, get the
and
Pixel.
And you got to carry it around.
Get the Pixel. It is your camera, and yes. then take that other $1,000 that you were going to spend on a phone or a camera or the, whatever headphones. The other thing, and go on another trip.
Yeah, that's a good point. Absolutely. This phone blows me away. I am so happy with the Pixel 3. It is definitely the camera of choice. And I had an iPhone in my pocket, too, but notice all the pictures, Pixel 3. Mm-hmm. That's where I go. That's the go-to.
Nice.
You can find out lots more about all kinds of Android devices on a show, a little show we like to call All About Android.
Oh, yes. You know that we're coming up on our 400th episode.
Wow.
400th episode in 2 weeks.
Florence
Actually, our last live episode, and it's going to be a special one.
Oh, Ron Richards. And not the last forever, just the last one
the
for
last
this year.
Live of the year.
Please,
sorry.
Don't scare me.
Sorry.
Jason Howell, he's the host every
Let's
Tuesday.
Let's talk after the show, Leo. No, I'm just kidding.
5 o'clock Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesdays. You got to watch All About Android. Of course, every Thursday with Megan Maroney for Tech News Weekly, about 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern time. It is a great summary of the week's tech news and interviews with the people making the news, which
is... Yeah, that show is a lot of fun. We talk to it
really well.
We talk, like, sometimes we cover, like, the big news, and sometimes we go kind of off into a different direction and just bring someone on that's just an interesting, unique piece of technology or whatever. We just have a lot of fun with the interviews there.
As with any good podcast, it's the personality of the host that makes the show, not the content particularly, but the people who are presenting it, and you guys do such a good job.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Leo.
It's great to see you. Thanks to all of you for joining us. You can watch us do the new screensavers Saturday afternoons, about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That would be about 2300 UTC, kind of late at night. But you can just go to twit.tv/live. There's live audio and video streams. You can see the behind-the-scenes making of the show and all of that. Because we, you know, this show gets edited quite a bit. You can be in the studio, too. We've got some nice folks from the studio audience, some visitors from India and from Minnesota. Two of my favorite places. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We'd love to put a chair out for you. If you're watching live or listening live, you should join us in the chat room. Because the chat room... is a fantastic place to be with the other people watching live making comments. It's irc.twit.tv, many of which are appreciated by yours truly. We love having the chat room, so irc.twit.tv. And then, of course, on demand, everything we do is available for download. Just go to twit.tv/NSS. And notice it says at the bottom of the screen, if you're watching the video, subscribe. We love it if you subscribe to any of our shows, because that way we know you'll have a copy. You know you'll have a copy the minute it's ready. You don't have to think about it. It'll just be there on your phone or your device. You can use any podcast app to subscribe. We like Pocket Casts, iTunes, Google's podcast is great. I have an icon on the desktop for my shows, and that way I can listen to them right away. Let's see, what else? Oh, if you have a voice assistant, Google, Amazon, Apple, you can always ask your voice assistant to listen to the new screensavers or listen to the new screensavers podcast, and most of the time, it'll figure that out. The rest of the time, it'll go, I don't know what you're talking about, but here's some holiday music. Either way, you win. Thanks for joining us. Keep watching. Keep listening. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.